Let me first thank the organizers for giving me an opportunity to speak here. I'll talk about some aspects of the diffuse hot gas in groups of galaxies and clusters, in particular the problem of excess entropy and what can AGNs do in that context. So I'll briefly go over the important properties of the objects that I'll be talking about. Everybody knows them, just to set the stage. So we know that most galaxies are found in either groups of galaxies with members less than, say, 50, or in rich clusters with membership in excess of hundreds or to even thousands. And the objects have masses in the range of, say, 10 to the 14 to 10 to the 15 solar masses, and which make them the largest gravitationally bound objects in the universe, and so interesting from the point of view of structure formation in the universe. And the sizes of these objects vary from 1 to several megaparsecs. What makes these objects interesting is the large amount of hot gas that they contain, with about 10 to 15% of the total mass is the baryon fraction. And since the temperature of this hot gas ranges from about 1 to several KV, that makes them shine very bright in X-rays, and one can these days even detect them from redshifts of the order of unity, so which makes them very interesting probes of structure formation and what structure formation can do to baryons. And the metallicity of this gas is of the order of 1/3 solar. As you can, this is a picture of a standard rich cluster, coma cluster, the central region of that in optical and in X-rays, and a group of galaxy in optical and X-rays. So you would like to talk about, learn, for example, how the X-ray observable parameters scale with mass or temperature, and we'll see that there will be some problems in understanding that. Going along with the properties, so in zeroth order, people usually neglect the self-gravity of the intercluster medium and just assume them to be test particles in the background potential well provided by the dark matter. One thinks that the temperature of the intercluster medium is well understood in terms of the potential well, because one notices that the thermal speed of the protons in this temperature is of the order the velocity dispersion of the galaxies, which is definitely dictated by the gravity. So the temperature is mainly dictated by the background potential well, but the density of the intercluster medium is not well understood. In other words, we don't understand why the intercluster medium should have the density that one observes. And to bring out this point, one usually defines a parameter which is closely related to the entropy, so I'll just call the parameter S, T over density, electron density to the power 2/3. As you can recognize, this is the entropy of the ideal gas stripped of the constants and the logarithm. And one very crudely can argue that objects forming at a given redshift has the mean density, which is a fixed multiple of the critical density at that redshift. And so if one looks at clusters, say at very low redshift, less than 0.2, and assume that, you know, they have formed very recently at one, at say Z of 0, then you roughly expect the entropy, this parameter, to scale linearly with T, and which is what you don't see. What one finds instead is that the entropy scales much slower, of the order of with an index of about 2/3 instead of linear with temperature, implying that the density is in low mass clusters, in poor clusters, in low temperature clusters, is much less than expected from these simple considerations. And this is these are 1 sigma.
Massive clusters form later and have a lower density, right? So that would presume you give me something more complicated than this kind of thing, but a traditional model.
Right. So if I just fix the collapse redshift, you're right. I mean, since rich clusters form much later, they should have. But if I assume that they have formed recently and, you know, at one, it's a very, very rough sort of argument. So in that case, any should be of pretty comparable. And then you would expect S proportional to T. And that shows up in the observations of different scalings. For example, if you assume gravity to be the only determining factor in the evolution of the gas in clusters, then one expects the extra luminosity to be proportional to n squared t half, assuming that it's mostly free-free. And the volume, and then if you assume that the temperature is mostly given by m over r, then it should go, Lx should be proportional to t squared, which is this line. For example, this is Lx and t, and instead of that, what you find is a much steeper relation, especially in the low temperature below 1 kV clusters of the order of about 2.8. That's again probably a manifestation of the density being less, so groups being underluminous. One can also expect that the gas fraction within a fixed fractional radius, say about 10% of the virial radius, or in this particular case 0.3 of R200, to be constant independent of the mass. But what you find instead is that the gas fraction increases with mass, especially it stays constant for rich cluster, but for low temperature clusters it varies. Yes. I forget exactly. I forget about the. Well, usually a lot of observers, I think, just scale it down to so that it can match with the rich clusters. But even then, there will be a shortfall here.
Sure. Yeah. But that's only
right. So it shows up also when you try to fit the density profiles with a standard beta profile, for example, and assuming a co-radius. So, for example, for each clusters, you find a beta of 2/3, which shows that density goes as 1 plus r over rc squared. But for low temperature clusters, the beta, the fitted beta, seems to be significantly lower than 2/3, which basically implies that the gas is density profile is much shallower. And of course, now one can observe the entropy, that the T over any 2/3 at different fractional radii. For example, at 10% of R200 and at R500. And in this recent paper, I think they have binned a large sample of data into different temperature bins. Say it again, please. Yeah, so the where the overdensity is 500 with respect to the critical. So for this radii, masses, it's of the order of 70% of the virial radius, I think. So it's pretty far out. So they have binned the data in a number of temperature bins to decrease the scatter and increase the, decrease the error bars. So early on, I think there were some indications that the entropy had reached a flow kind of thing. But that has gone away. It is seem to be gradually decreasing, but still far in excess of what one expects. This is the expectation from numerical simulations of just assuming that the density would scale self-similarly with dark matter. And even at far, a large radius, although the excess is not that significant for rich clusters, but it seems to be significant for low temperature clusters. Yeah, this is the 0.65 approximately I mentioned. So one then realizes that this simple expectations actually comes from saying that gravity is the only determining force. So you then try to invoke the non-gravitational processes, some gas processes like heating or radiative cooling. And in fact, there was a paper by Brian in 2000. Notice that the efficiency of galaxy formation in poor groups is in groups of galaxies is much larger than in rich clusters. And then he argued that this radiative cooling could remove the low entropy gas from the center inner region, and the high entropy gas would rush in to raise the entropy level in the central region. And in fact, if you look at a very simple argument, I mean, the cooling time from free-free would be proportional to T half divided by N, and if you assume that this is of the order of Hubble time and fix that, then S should be going to T to the power 2/3, which is a very interesting point that they brought out in a Nature paper. And this is what you see. So this is for different values of Hubble constant and for point third solar metallicity. But it looks like only radiative cooling is probably not the only story, the whole story. For example, Helston and Pondman, they argued that the correlation between X-ray luminosity and the blue luminosity, there is no break going from poor groups to rich clusters. So they argued that this probably shows against goes against higher efficiency of galaxy formation in poor groups. Also, numerical simulations showed that if you just have radiative cooling to explain the excess entropy, you end up with a huge amount of cool gas in the center, more than what is comfortable. And this one can understand by saying that if you want the high entropy gas to rush in and still have high entropy, you would like to have the flow time to be much smaller than the cooling time, which would result in a very high mass flux. But it appears that a number of numerical simulations have seen that if you add heating, one can explain the observations. And heating, the idea of heating goes back a long way. Kaiser suggested in 1991, in it's a different but related context, of explaining the lack of or the negative evolution of X-ray luminosity function in of clusters. Basically, if you say that the gravity is the only determining force, then one expects in a flat universe, omega not is equal to one universe, SCDM kind of universe, more extraluminous objects at high redshift, which you don't see. And he argued that preheating, for example, in a simulation like this, preheating would make the gas more fluffy, decrease the extraluminosity, and so explain the evolution of the extraluminosity function. Well, that original motivation has gone away because lambda CDM model can seems to explain the observed evolution. But the idea, he had also pointed out that preheating would explain the steepness of the LX versus T relation. And it has been suggested that of the order of 1 kV per particle would suffice to explain the entropy observations.
Is that simulation including the radiative cooling as well?
This, I forget. This is by Bialik and Moore and Evrard. I'll have to check. But there have been a number of simulations by K et al. And Muan Guang, I think, who include both cooling and heating. So basically, you impulsively add some energy per particle and then let the intercluster medium cool radiatively. So some prescription of energy injection. So, if going along with the heating mechanism, and if one wants to find out when and how you would inject this energy, one can roughly argue that from early data one had thought of an entropy flow at about 200 kV per 200 kV centimeter square, and if you want to inject the energy in the intergalactic medium before the gas falls into the cluster, so with critical density, then you can write the kT in terms of the injection redshift. And if you want about 1 kV per particle, then you see that you have to inject a lot of energy at redshift of 5. So you do require substantial revision of the standard thermal history of the IGM that we know. So in this context, one is one interesting possibility is the warm-hot intergalactic medium, because that has a large, it's larger than critical density, so computing redshift could be much less than 5. And Villegas, Schiff, and Joe wrote a very interesting paper last year saying that one can find good agreement with the observed relation of exoluminosity and temperature, if the entropy of the warm hot intergalactic medium is diluted by a factor of 2/3, saying that 1/3 of the intergalactic medium comes from the substructures, the member galaxies, and this is also consistent with the fact that the metallicity is 1/3 solar, and this should be checked out, tested by the numerical simulations. So one asks if there is a preheated adiabat to which you need to raise the gas to be able to explain the observations. And Tozzi and Norman wrote a very interesting paper in this regard, calculating the hierarchical growth of clusters with the baryonic shells, accretion of baryonic shells, and which go through accretion shocks. And the shells are initially put on a preheated adiabat, which is a free parameter for them. And they play around with a few values. And if you write in terms of P over rho to the power gamma in this crazy unit, arcs per arc centimeter squared gram to the power minus 5/3. So of that order, of the order of 10 to the 34 or so, that seems to explain the observations. And this actually corresponds if you write in terms of KT over any 2/3 of the order of 440 kV centimeter square. But there seems to be some problem with the standard preheating scenario coming from some recent observations like this one, where Ponman et al., they have plotted the scaled entropy, which is S over T, so that you can plot the entropy profiles of groups and rich clusters in one plot. And this is the scale radius, and this is the expectations from Tozzi-Norman kind of calculations with a slope of about 1.1. And these are the entropy profiles of clusters in different temperature bins. And these are for clusters reached to semi-poor clusters, and this is for a group of galaxies. And as you can see, that there is no entropy core. And the entropy seems to gradually decline, although far in excess of the expectations from, simple expectations. But there is no entropy core. I think there is also a problem from...
That's entropy S over T.
S over T. This, what is that, one?
Yeah,
like,
S over
T, okay. But I think other observers, like, they also project S over T, like, I think there's an observation by Mushotsky of a group of galaxies, again, showing gradually declining.
So that pattern doesn't mean that S is constant, that S is 2.9. S over T.
No, for a given cluster, it is there is a core. The T refers to the emission weighted temperature of the cluster. Recently, there was a paper by Ettore et al., who had a sample of about 2 dozens of clusters and different temperature bins, showing the excess entropy as a function of the redshift. This is a redshift less than 1.2. And in the simple arguments, you would expect if the density of electrons goes as Hubble constant square, then if you define E of Z as the ratio of the Hubble constant to the local Hubble constant, then if I multiply S of Z with Ez of 2 to the power 4/3, then it should linearly scale with T, and plots points for different temperature bin, different redshift bins should fall on top of one another. But as you can see, this is Ez 2 to the power 4/3 and S, and clusters and four different redshift bins are plotted here as a function of T. And as you can see, that they're clearly separated out. This is for the red dots are for the highest redshift bin. And there is some redshift evolution. And they claim that it is in conflict with simple, at least redshift independent preheating adiabat. As I was looking at this, I thought, well, first of all, this scaling with redshift is with respect to the redshift of observation. And if you want to ascribe the preheating adiabat before it fell into the cluster, the gas fell into the cluster, one needs to invoke the redshift of formation. Now in structure formation, if you scenario, if you define the formation redshift to be the redshift where a halo that I see now, or at some redshift, had the last major merger, then there's a distribution of that. And I was wondering if one could play around with that, and if the distribution of the range, one sigma range of Z formation, for example, would blur this interpretation. And so this is a simple toy model. Sorry, the plot is not very clear here. Anyway, I set up NFW profiles at a different redshift and basically use the Z-independent adiabat of Tozzi-Norman. And so at the formation redshift, I just enhance the entropy and let the intercluster medium passively cool in a Lagrangian kind of way, this radiative cool and shrink until the redshift of observation. And I see that the lines are here with a one sigma, well, between 30 to 70% of redshift formation, the range is here, whereas the observations go this way. And this is in clear conflict with the observations. So then I played around with what sort of adiabat, what sort of redshift evolution of the adiabat I would need. And I, in terms of the energy deposited, I find that one needs a pretty steep evolution in redshift. At least it's redshift of 1. Okay, so one then thinks about what sort of source of energy could provide this kind of scaling and energy. And for example, people have thought about supernovae driven winds, and initially it was thought that it could even be consistent with just the metal abundance in the intercluster medium. If you assume the supernovae, all the supernovae giving 10 to the 51 ergs, and I think some numerical simulations showed that you need 100% efficiency of the supernovae going to wind and then depositing all of its energy into the intercluster medium, which seems to be a tall order. And here in this regard, I have there is an correlation that I don't think I understand well, and maybe somebody here can shed some light on. This is an ASCA observation of the correlation between the abundance ratio of silicon to iron as a function of temperature, which seems to be a pretty tight correlation. And since most of the iron comes from type 1, it seems to show an increasing contribution of type 1 supernovae from poor clusters. And we know that type 1 supernovae kick in much later, maybe a giga year later. So does it show that the gas from poor clusters have been evacuated, moved out during the initial type 2 enrichment phase? And does it hint towards some sort of an energy deposition phase? Anyway, I find this very intriguing. Another obvious candidate for energy sources is AGNs, at least for the radio loud AGNs. One can think of the jets, the mechanical energy of the jets depositing a large fraction of their into the ambient medium, and people have done estimates even with fractions as large as 1/4. Also, when the jet has ceased to be active, one can imagine the bubbles, cocoons of relativistic plasma being buoyant and rising up in the atmosphere and doing PdV work. But one nagging question that one has in this regard is, what is the abundance of AGNs in clusters?
Are you still thinking that in terms of energy pre-heating? You're still thinking in terms of AGN preheating the gas prior to the collapse of the cluster, or doing it while the cluster is still there? I mean, what's the difference between preheating and heating for continuous heating?
Right. So here I have to make the calculations concrete, I have thought about heating after the cluster is formed. so that I have an NFW profile to work with. But it could be
the AGN as a duty cycle. So you keep
Right. I'll come to that. We haven't done this in a proper cosmological setting as yet. So there's a lot of work to be done. But after the cluster is set in, after the gravitational potential is set in, if you then let the AGN work on the gas, then well, as far as radio loud quasars, radio galaxies are concerned, there is some that a lot of radio galaxies are there in clusters and in groups of galaxies, and locally and at high redshift. There's an interesting paper by Bacall and Chokshi, who looked at the correlation length of radio galaxies and found that this is of the order of 11 H inverse megaparsec, which lies between the correlation length of galaxies and that of rich clusters. And they claim that radio galaxies preferentially reside in poor clusters. And that is where you need a lot of action. And this seems to be confirmed by 2DF data from BEST. So we did, again, a very toy kind of model. Since there are phenomenological ways of constructing luminosity functions of quasars or radio galaxies from preshector, we use the extended preshector to find the luminosity function of radio galaxies or quasars inside clusters of a given mass. And a fraction of this AGN luminosity we deposited in the intercluster medium, and we found that this is energy per particle, this is temperature of the cluster. And one can see that one can get of the order of, so this is what we get. If you want to have 1 kV per particle from AGNs, we needed not only just radio galaxies, but also radio quiet AGNs, and assuming that they also go through some sort of BL-like phase with energetic winds, which is in the realm of possibilities. But I think there are some recent numerical simulations showing that one probably doesn't need as high as 1 kV, but even 0.3 kV per particle is also enough. It's a paper by Borgani et al. So if you say that, if you ground that, then probably even radio galaxies would suffice. And one interesting point is that AGN activity would rise with redshift, at least redshift to less than 2, so it may be possible to even match the requirement of redshift scaling of S times E z to the power 4/3. Then we thought we should try to look at the physics of how the energy is being deposited in the intercluster medium. And in that regard, we thought there has been a lot of work on the effervescent heating model in the context of cooling flows. And we thought, for example, this is from the buoyant bubbles of relativistic plasma, which has been blown by the jet, and that would rise in the intercluster medium atmosphere. For example, here you can see this X-ray hole, which is very far from the cooling flow region, very central region. And they would presumably rise and expand because there's a pressure gradient and keep on doing PdV work. And for example, simulations like this seem to show that bubbles rise and in the atmosphere and keep on depositing energy. And people think that they are quite effective in quenching cooling flows. So the question we wanted to ask is, can they also affect the entropy at outer radii as far as R500? And in particular, we thought, since the entropy requirement at different radii are different, can one, for example, if you have a central CDL, central AGN, can we, with S as you know, least number of free parameters, can we explain the entropy requirements at different radii? And so we evolve the intercluster medium with effervescent heating, radiative cooling, and convection. And the free parameters are the AGN luminosity and the time of activity, the duration of the activity. We let the AGN on for a certain time, and then the intercluster medium is let passively evolves till Hubble time, and then we compare with the observations. And from the 1 sigma error bars of the observations of entropy, we can find out what is the range in the energy deposition that we need. And we find something very interesting. We find that this is the energy required in 10 to the 62 works, and this is the mass of the cluster, and this is the range, and this is just a line just to guide you right through. It's a linear line we just drew. And we found that the energy input requirement, I'll just take 5 minutes, seems to be roughly proportional to the cluster mass. And if one writes very crudely that the central AGN mass is some fraction of the cluster mass, and use the Megorian relation between the black hole mass and the AGN mass, and if one says that the fraction eta of the black hole mass is converted to energy, and say that this is the 15%, then F is of the order of 1% or so. Emphasize this too much, but this is hard to resist. There was a recent paper by D. Grandi et al. Showing that there seems to be some sort of a correlation, hint of a correlation between the optical magnitude, this is the R band, of the central CD galaxy and the cluster potential. And one can actually, if you assume some sort of an IMF, one can convert this optical magnitude to some sort of a stellar mass to a halo mass. But this is only, you know, less than 10 clusters, so one probably needs confirmation from other larger samples. And there was an interesting paper recently also from a group in, this is a paper by Judith Crossan that just appeared in AstroPH, who did a very interesting experiment with looking at, this is the X-ray luminosity versus temperature curve, and they looked at groups with AGNs in them and separated into two sets, radio quiet, blue circles, and radio loud, red squares. And as you can see, the groups with radio loud AGNs seems to be systematically in the excess higher entropy side, which is probably indicative of some indication, connection between the radio loud AGNs and the excess entropy. But again, so I'll just briefly mention some of the things that we have doing after that. Another context in which the excess entropy would show up is in the CMB studies through SZ effects, because the distortion in the microwave background would depend on the integrated pressure along the line of sight. And if the entropy is enhanced, this should decrease the amount of distortion. But the question is how much? There was some work by early work by Holder and Karlstrom, who looked at the power spectrum. This is the CL. I think it's L square CL. Yeah, versus L. And so the solid lines are the standard SZ predictions, and then they put in some entropy. This is 200 kV centimeter square. This is the early data, the entropy flow from the early data that they had. And they showed that the dotted line, so since the low mass groups would be affected more, so the higher Ls would get affected. The SZ signal should decrease. And we thought, since we have the density and temperature profiles from our AGN heating model, we should also do similar calculations. And this is still in work in progress. And but it seems to show that we do have a decrement, but it's not as severe as was previously thought.
If you're preheating, would have a bigger signal, you're preheating.
Well, actually, you're.
It's something cold, and now you put it at some higher
degree. Well, you're actually pushing the gas out.
If I fix a very low temperature, there's some gas that would have been in a cold temperature if I hadn't shot it.
Simply because the bubble is expanding, it has to be higher pressure.
Oh no, this has no contribution from the bubbles. This is only the ambient gas. Only in the ambient gas, yes. As I said, this is work in progress. So, but they had only put in the entropy, let the gas be settle down in a hydrostatic equilibrium. And so this is what they got. But yes, I agree, there would be some...
In your
The effect on the ambient gas after the bubbles have heated it up. But there would be some contribution from the bubbles, you're right. But still we think that it's probably not as severe as was previously thought. It should probably, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, because we actually see somewhere here the signal in excess of the standards as a prediction. So, and there was a paper last year by Lapi et al. They had considered a model of blast waves from a central AGN, which would explain the entropy, and they said that the blast waves, as they cross the line of sight, there will be huge change in the SZ signals, and there will be a lot of transient features. So our model of effervescent heating is much more gentle, and what we find is the time evolution of the central decrement, for example, for different luminosities, and we see changes of the order of only a factor of three or so. So just to summarize, feedback from active galaxies seems to be important in the context of the excess entropy, and also may be required for to explain the redshift evolution of excess entropy. And we find that the effervescent heating model from radio loud AGN seems to be a viable model, and we seem to require the energy to be deposited to be proportional to the cluster mass. And it's possible that some recent observations have already revealed that the connection between radio loud AGNs and the excess entropy. And lastly, we think, but we still have to confirm, that the decrease in the SZ signal from AGN heating or preheating could be less than previously thought. Thank you.
Another effect which goes in the opposite direction to increase the SZ signal, that's because for every radio load you see, there are 10 or 100 that are dead.
Yes.
Gas,
yes, absolutely. I agree. What is the after the paper by Yamada et al., which you wrote, I think there was a paper by Torsten and Enslin and Kaiser, who just use the existing the observed luminosity function, and found that the SZ decrement is much smaller than in paper, but they didn't consider that dead radio galaxies would be there. I agree.
So, Bima, why do you have a stronger effect from AGN effervescent heating in groups than in clusters?
One can, cluster scale. Yeah, one could argue that in the radio galaxies probably. So in this simple model, we had only one central AGN at the center, in a spherical symmetric cluster. But one could argue that, you know, there will be other AGNs as well. And if the studies by Best and from 2DF showing anything, then radio galaxies probably. The number of radio galaxies, or say per unit mass, seems to be more in groups than in clusters. So they would have a much larger effect.
That's local. That's as we today.
That's local. That's local. Yes. But yeah. I should also mention that although I found a completely redshift independent preheating adiabat doesn't seem to work, I tried with the critical entropy level that Ivan has worked out with. So there is a redshift evolution, and it may be consistent with within the error bars. Say it again, please.
So it's just the entropy you need to match cooling, so it won't
cool. Much cooling, yeah, exactly. Just the Hubble time, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually.
So, It's not 0.3, but it's like 0.4, but it's close enough. Could be interesting. Maybe one should look at that.
We already mentioned the fact that you don't have a favorite explanation for silicon over iron behavior as a function of plastic temperature. So, can you have any speculation for that? I mean, what does it mean?
This is the speculation that they had in their paper in just one or two sentences. And I don't know if I should also first look if Chandra has confirmed it or. And this is Asuka.
The sensitive effect was silicon over iron increased to an increasing temperature.
Yes.
I mean, that's basically the effect you see in giant galaxies, right? The ultra over iron enhancement goes up. And it's also
with mass.
Contrary to the nine hierarchical models. It simply means that for whatever reason, star formation took longer, more efficient, and more deeper potential wealth.
But you understand that in a single galaxy on a cluster scale, you need to understand what.
It's intriguing, yeah.
It's probably saying something, but.
But usually it is related, as you're saying.
Right.
Star formation lasted for a short time, right? The shorter, the larger is that ratio. But on a cluster scale, which is made of many type of galaxies, it's hard to understand. All right, we don't.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.